settle in, get comfortable, and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Mick and Sylvie Avery.
Hello, I'm Sylvie Avery, and welcome to Spirit's Work, the show that's designed to stretch your mind and broaden your understanding about life on Earth, life after death, and life in other dimensions. Each week with our spirit friends, we discuss a different topic of interest, and our hope is that through listening to those who continue to walk with us and watch over us, we can offer you further options and choices to mull over and investigate within your own mind. This week's show is called Parallel Lives.
Hi, I'm Mick Avery. As well as Spirit's Work on bbsradio.com on Mondays at 9 p.m. PST and Thursdays at 2 p.m. PST, for the month of June you'll be able to hear reruns of our shows at 11 till 12 noon every day of the week. We also have another radio show, which is Spirit Teaching on artistfirst.com every Tuesday at 8 p.m. PST. And if you would like to know more about us or our books and CDs, please go to our website, which is www.spirit-teaching.com. I'm a deep trance medium, and as usual, I'll be bringing through spirit guide Gregory Hay, who will be speaking to you and Sylvie. Gregory will borrow my body for the rest of the show, and I will not be aware of anything that happens from then on, as my spirit and consciousness are taken elsewhere. Gregory had an Earth life 300 years ago, and he has come back to help us with the benefit of his education and development in the spirit world. But I'll let Sylvie take it from here, because I have to go off, and in a few seconds Gregory will be here to talk to you. Bye.
Thanks, Mick. Apart from his many other tasks in the spirit world, Gregory Hay is now the spokesperson for a massive educational group called the White Cloud Group. They consist of eminent scientists and scholars from all walks of life. He was asked to be the representative of the group by White Cloud himself, who is a shining one. Gregory's very modest, but we think it must have been because he has such an endearing personality and wonderful communication skills that he was selected to help humanity and save our world. And I, for one, am very grateful that there are those on the other side, in other dimensions, who still care enough to try to steer us towards a more peaceful spiritual path. And I guess that leads us nicely into our subject for today. That of parallel lives. Hello, Gregory.
Hello, dear friend.
Nice to have you again.
It is with love, as always, that we are here, and I am so privileged and honored, as always, to be able to speak with you in this way. We thank all of those present who have allowed this situation to come about.
Thank you. Well, the delight is ours. So today you're going to be talking to us about parallel lives, I believe.
Yes, friend. This is really centrally to your living condition. That is how you bring about decisions in your life to operate your life, to bring about well-being. Could it be that so many of you actually are at the behest of someone else's judgment or action, someone else's thoughts? Whatever they have decided should come about in your life is in fact what happens. Many of you, of course, are employed by someone else in a job of work. It may be that aspects of this job of work bring you into constant contact with other people. Some of this contact may be at variance with your ability to carry out the work you are given to do. It may be, for example, that if you do something like working in a shop, and that you are serving customers, or perhaps you are just stacking shelves, or that kind of thing, you still possibly have interactivity with people, with customers, who are looking for the goods that you have. Therefore, then, you are bringing about knowledge and understanding, perhaps, in sharing information and understanding to that customer, the person who needs your help. It may well be the decision that was made for you to become employed at that place was actually something that suited you very well, because, in fact, you had a leaning or an understanding, perhaps a gift of excessive memory, of being able to know where specific things were in any one place in the store. And it may be a very large store. So how is it then that such people are so well fitted or adjusted for a particular place of work or a job of work? You could not perhaps originate that as being a facet of a gift that you may have coming from the spirit world. And yet it is. It's an aspect of your ability of memory, of being able to recall aspects, situations, places, names and times and positions of a particular object. Therefore, it is actually rather clever that you are able to recall specific items at a glance. Surely then this means it is as though your life plan had been worked out for you before you even had the physical life. You would not have known, perhaps, when you were at school, that you were actually going to be able to use the gifts that you had, perhaps not as yet realized, in such a way, so as to define that you actually could do something useful. I know I am talking here about some lowly position, perhaps, that others see that as being. Mark my words, it is not a lowly position, because you are, although perhaps kept in some way, in some aspect of the caste system that operates in your origin, in your town, or the country that you live in, or whatever, that actually you are using your ability to recall and recount certain images within your mind, even if you had not actually placed the things, the items there to begin with. You still know and are aware of where they are. This is an account, in fact, of your absolute registry aspect of your memory. And yes, you actually use a gift of spirit for it. In fact, you use several. You use your memory recall, which, agreed, is a part of your physical aspect of life. But coupled with that is the actual energy which helps to produce it. And this is something which brings about a fine-tuned status of your memory recall. It isn't just that you have exercised your brain well, but rather something else. So this, then, is surely to do about decisions that you have made in your life and how you have come to this point. If you are well-suited to a particular kind of work or a particular activity, you may find that synchronicity brings you to that place, primarily because that is the gift aspect, as I say, that you were actually born with, that perhaps there would be some way of identifying that gift that you have, and that in some light of day, life would have it that the blocks fall into place and the building of your life is set, enabling you to be able to function in a particular way. Of course, this means that other choices that you make perhaps would never actually have been realized. Well, what about the dreams that you had when you were a child of what you were going to do with your life? Perhaps it was something to do with being a fireman or an ambulance driver or something like that. Or perhaps you wanted to be a nurse. Whether you are a male or female, it makes no difference. Perhaps whatever the aspect of work that actually appealed to you, that you found entertained you, brought imagination and sent bells a ringing in your ears, was actually just a dream, but that there were underlying aspects of your gifts of spirit which actually were there to enhance your life, even though you did not know as yet how the recall effect would work or how that image-making scenario machinery within your mind would actually bring itself about in your life, would manifest itself. All this then shows and points the way toward you being an identity of change, of being able to take one scenario in your life, the dream pattern that you had, and turn it about into something completely different, even though perhaps you were not the ongoing engineer of that dream shift. You actually managed to manipulate your life, or that it was manipulated around you by others because they could possibly see the prospect you had within you, the gift that you had. It could actually be of use to them, or perhaps it was just something that was by sheer chance. Are we actually saying in this way that chance actually happens? or is it that everything is to do with synchronicity of life? Well, I do have to say, friend, that most certainly there are chances and situations that you may bring about in your life which, if you are positive in your affirmations, if you bring it the energy of your life to bear upon wanting and needing and wishing, bringing reality to your doorstep, then surely it will be something that will come about that will bear fruit for you to follow. So decisions that you make are not just enhanced by thoughts that you have already had. Naturally, in life's rich pattern, the texts will change. The images will alter. What you dream of yesterday is not what you will dream of today or tonight or tomorrow morning. The life that you have now will not necessarily always be in the same place or in the same plane of existence. It may be you draw upon parallel lives. This is to do with the possibilities of what you could have, or the synchronicity of what might be developing in your life just around the corner, even though you do not actually know of its existence presently. It may be, of course, something that you have already worked upon, that you have created great energy toward, and yet, time and time again, have you ever wondered why it is that even though you are creating all of this energy to put it into something, that it never actually bears fruit? It may well be that you are just simply in the wrong place or at the wrong time. Many people have lives which are like that. It is as though they actually move through life and have these dreams and goals they set and yet actually never quite make that dream a reality. It is as though they are living the wrong life. But in parallel lives, what you are doing is you are realizing the possibility of the dreams you had, or the possibility of the intuitive state that you have. Perhaps it is to do with the gift of sight or sound, the gift of some other physical attribute that you have in your physical makeup. It may well be this gives you an opening into how to see your future pan out before you. Decisions that you make are not always affected by dreams you have had or by thoughts you have conjured up during your adolescence. On the other hand, of course, you may have always dreamed of working in a bank or of doing some other task, such as serving other people in some kind of industry. There's nothing wrong in any of these aspects of how you actually manipulate your day, break up your day into sections of time when you are working for somebody else or perhaps for yourself, and time when you actually play or sleep or are motivated by some other aspect of life. This is all to do with the decisions that you make in your life and how you come around to positive parallel thinking of the harmonic voice that you have in your life. After all, if you are doing something that you enjoy, then you are living in harmony. In living in harmony, you bring your accent into the upper house of reality. It means that your vibration shifts from being desperately poor or negative about your life into having affirmations of positivity. And so this is actually a life-altering and constant corrective posture that you have. You know your course of life. You constantly shift and alter your course slightly so that your little boat of life can continue upon its way, steering beyond the rocks, beyond the seashore, into the hope of life that you have.
When you say that much of our pathways are out of our control because a decision can be taken by someone else higher up in the pecking order.
Yes.
So that means that you could be led somewhere completely different to how you had planned it or envisaged it, but that it could still be the right move to make.
Yes, quite so. And it is not to say, my friend, that you that it was all mapped out and planned for you when you were in the spirit world and you were simply assigned the task or the life to lead, perhaps enjoying or not the form of death that you were going to take part in order to then retrieve yourself for another life. It doesn't mean to say that it is mapped out to that extent. You are not regurgitating your life again and again in order to display at someone else's pleasure their instance of what they had already mapped out for you. There's a good boy or girl, run along and play this game or that game, and let me see just how it works out. And it is not either that your life is at the behest always of someone else. After all, you really do have free will. You really do have your decision-making process within a mind. It is really up to you to have the focus and presence of will to be able to move with it, to be able to change it when it is your decision to do so, which is why decision-making is so important. It affects your innermost judgment, your upper house security. How else are you going to be happy or become happier in your life if you cannot make decisions which affect change from being in poverty to becoming comfortable?
But I think we're pressurized, aren't we, a lot of the time into doing something that maybe is not our calling, purely because it's in a monetary sense, we have to go for that just to live a better life.
Absolutely so. And of course, you then become a slave to that life.
Mm-hmm.
You are feeling that you are non-productive or that your productivity is in fact of a lesser worth or state than you could otherwise be in. This means, of course, quite simply that you are unhappy with your current life plan.
You're unfulfilled.
And unfulfilled, yes, quite so. There are ways, of course, to alter this. You may move beyond your current scheme of what has been already allotted to you and actually decide to change an event for yourself. This may be a little unnerving, of course, to begin with. You may make mistakes, and that is not a bad thing either. It doesn't mean to say that you, as soon as you make a mistake, move away from the idea completely and just carry on with what you were doing in the first place, continuing your mundane job or the plan or skill of work you really didn't like to do at all, but that you were bullied somehow into it in your adolescence. It doesn't mean to say that you have to be accepting of that kind of responsibility towards someone else, particularly if you are so unhappy. What you really need to do, and you owe it to yourself, because you do only have one life, is to change it, to actually alter the scheme of things you are in. I know this is easy for me to say. I do not have a physical body, do not have the issues to do with dealing with a physical life. But really what it means to say is if you are unhappy, you will be less productive. If you are negative toward the situation of your, so say, productive life, it means that you will be less active and positive in your home life, or you will be less precious about the children that you have, or the home that you have, or perhaps the friends that you have, or your family. This then brings about the entrails of abuse, and extreme negativity can set in at any time, which is really why we feel that people on your side of life who are actually in the place of work that they really despise really need to get out and seek a different road.
Yes, even though it's a frightening prospect.
Yes, I understand it is difficult for many to let go.
Because it could be very secure where they are.
Of course, yes. And the pressurized system which you may be living within, that is, perhaps you are in a very material country or something like that, something where perhaps your family life pressures mean that you need to constantly bring home money in order for your family to survive, to eat, to clothe themselves, to put a roof over your head, have a vehicle or whatever it is. Or perhaps it is not that you live in that kind of environment at all. It may be that you live in a mud hut somewhere, and that all you really need to do is to hunt and fish, or grow crops, or whatever it is. Are we saying that the same thing applies to that as well? Yes, we are. We are saying that in a parallel life, you can either be happy, or you can be extremely sad. You may live a fulfilled life with health and happiness, with good fulfilling organs that manage to give you the ability to walk all the way through your life with very little illness. Good genetics behind your physical makeup that allow you to actually not have that many things wrong with you. And of course that you are sensible in your eating practices and your job at work, or the way in which you actually exercise yourself in order to maintain your fitness. All of these things add up to the positivity that you feel, and your ability to accept change may come at a price to all of these.
Well, I think we have to choose our careers so young. I think it's very young to know that that's what you want to do for the rest of your life.
Absolutely so, and I completely agree with you, friend. Many people, of course, will perhaps be told that this is something that they have to centrally focus on, that they will never be good at anything else, and that this is the only plank in the box, the only coin for them to actually be able to use to benefit their life plan. This, of course, may leave some people very distraught indeed, simply because they had no notion of doing that kind of thing in the first place. Perhaps they actually wanted really only to go and lay bricks, but then suddenly found that they did not have the capability, the physical capability, in the way that they had been physically built. Perhaps their back could not stand that kind of work, or something like that, or perhaps they just could not understand the math behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean to say then that they will always be condemned in doing something that they could never actually need to fulfill their lives?
So are you saying that somebody who's a high-flying, high-powered secretary or a business person with a large salary is no better than somebody who's stocking shelves in a supermarket?
Absolutely so. Completely, yes. Mm-hmm. I am saying that if that person who is stocking shelves in the supermarket is happy at doing that, if they are seeing that there are notes which are fulfilling their lives, perhaps it is, as I say, to do with physical interactivity with their customers or whatever,
mm-hmm.
or perhaps it is giving them advice, and therefore they are feeling situations of self-worth, they are feeling helpful towards someone.
And perhaps they are happier and healthier through not having the stress, carrying the stress that this other person is carrying every day, you know?
Absolutely so.
Living by the clock and just yes. eating on the hoof and yes. all the other stressful things that go with it.
Yes, of course, yes. And actually having the position of being constrained and confined to a very specific regime that they have to adopt in order to get something done at a particular time.
Mm. Yes.
Of course, animals do not have this to contend with. They simply live and be. They are in the presence of being most of the time. How fortunate they are.
Hmm. So do you think that we would be better if we actually did drop a lot of the new technology that we have these days and the materialism and step back and go back in time slightly?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I am not advocating that one little bit. What I am saying is that perhaps decisions that people have to face are actually faced at too young an age. And really, such decisions should be delayed. There should be no pressure whatsoever upon any child to be moving within a certain direction, unless, of course, they already have an obvious gift for it that is showing the light of day. Perhaps it is that they have a particular gift for math or calculus in some way. Perhaps it is that they have a gift of science or biology. Perhaps very good with remembering names and dates, can speak other languages fluently, and see nothing of this as being a barrier to their life. Obviously, these people will already have an identity to make. And what of those who are gifted in some other way, perhaps musically or artistically? That obviously means that they would be pressured themselves into continuing along this line, this train of thought, rigidly, even though perhaps they may actually want to do something entirely different with it. An artist or someone who was very good at drawing figures did not actually want to become an artist, but rather had a leaning toward architectural drawing instead, and really wanted to draw figurines as statues or something like that.
Mm.
You see, the connotation is always thought, well, you would use this in an obvious way. It is not necessarily so. It is as though you are thinking in a parallel thought. You have the thought of doing one thing and you see it through to the obvious conclusion and then find that you are actually dissatisfied with what that thought produced. and that is merely because you adopted the principle that what you first thought, oh, well, it must mean this. This must be the decision that I meant to make, and therefore continuing along that line. Whereas instead you should have taken time to reflect and understand what that would actually mean. Would you really be happy in bringing this about for your life plan? Or would it actually be something which would not stir you in the long term? Perhaps this is something which you would find did not actually spiritually uplift you in that way. It may have been that instead of being an artist, you actually wanted to lay bricks and create things that an architectural drawing was depicting, instead of actually doing it in the reverse way around, and that you had to sit at a desk with a pen or pencil and paper. That you actually physically built the thing somebody else saw in their mind's eye. Therefore, you are each utilizing the gifts that you really do have to its best effect, to its fullest completion for your life.
I'd like to say thank you for those who may have just joined us on Spirit's Work. You're listening to Spirit Guide Gregory Hay, being channeled by Deep Trance Medium Mick Avery. I'm Sylvie Avery, and we're discussing parallel lives. I think we are told to think in a certain way, aren't we, as children, that we actually, we're given so many different options, and we're put in boxes. You can be this, this, or this, or think a certain way, and then that means you can become that. We're not stretched, and we can only be as informed as our peers at that young age.
Yes, I do believe that part of the problem is that children are not actually taught to learn. They are rather instead taught a particular syllabus or a particular frame of reference that this is how you learn and this is what you do with this. The sheet that you have to read and regurgitate at a specific time of examination or whatever. This is the whole course of your life. You have to be able to underpin with memory of it so that you can regurgitate it at any time, at any moment we choose you to do so. And that is basically how people have to learn, how they have to use their retention memory in order to access knowledge or wisdom they have already gained. The problem is that it isn't actually wisdom at all. It is just regurgitated knowledge from someone else's mind. What you are not learning to do is to focus attention to create wisdom, to create and manifest things to do with collecting knowledge and turning it into something useful.
Yes, that's right. And very often it's history, all to do with in the past and not the future.
Yes, of course. You are constantly referring backward in time into how this mechanism actually came about, which of course to a certain extent is useful if you want to know then the different pitfalls and the currency, if you like, of that particular event and what has already been done to it in order to prove its worth thus far. Then you actually know what not to do because there is no point in repeating life's history, the history of the object in question. It then means all you do is you continue upon the journey. And this is really what is meant by teaching you all of the history in the first place of a particular thing or time or whatever. So you will actually gain perspective of life and therefore understand the learning from it, from the mistakes, from the events of avenues of time past that have created desperate images, negative ones, and positive displays of euphoria, which have meant that it has worked.
And what about the physiological effect of these dreams that we have? We know that positivity and negativity, whether you're positive or negative, can have an effect on whether you go for things in your day or not, whether you feel confident to do that day to day.
Yes.
Physiologically, what happens to people to break them down?
Well, actually, what tends to occur is if a person's idea is defeated again and again, if it may be that the memory or the thought which had previously been underlined with good hope or with a belief system within it that actually magnified it and gave it impetus to mean something viable to that person, it is then, of course, calling into question their ability to rise to a challenge, to actually express judgment upon a particular thing. this means, then it calls into question this judgment. Therefore, they become aggravated, they become exasperated and actually short of breath. It may be this turns into a squall of life. That is, this quickness of breath, this deflated ego, yes, I dare say I have to use that word. It is, after all, that ego is very often quite centrally important to allow someone to remain buoyant in their life. And this is not about selfishness and not about the other ugly reposes that ego, or the word ego, reflects upon a being. I am talking really then about the situation of change where a person who feels they are in a negative trough and unable to climb beyond it, actually do this, regurgitate it, regurgitate the system of failure, because that is what they feel. Quite rightly so, I suppose. Many people, they think they have failed, when in actual fact all they have done is failed to focus upon a certain avenue. Perhaps it was that the focus or attention they had was insufficient to carry it through, that they were unable to see a particular marker or of a signpost beyond that journey or upon the journey that enabled them to make a right or left turn which would have affected their decision process making. Very often people miss these cues in life and then they wonder why it is they have ended up in a cul-de-sac.
Yes.
Because they did not see the signpost that said there is no way out of this one.
But also you can miss a signpost that says actually you are where you're supposed to be, that's fine.
Yes, quite so, and really do not panic.
Yes.
And that, of course, is another issue. Sometimes people have to just stay and remain where they are. It is not a time for them to move, but they have to merely take a breath and step back from the position, from the challenge of change. Occasionally, it may be it is not exactly synchronistically the right time to make the move to change. You have to weigh up the balances of whether the evolutionary state of what you are thinking is actually going to bear fruit or not in your life.
And sometimes it can be down to the people around you, friends and so-called loved ones, family or whatever, who may be even jealous of your ambition, that stops people from going forward and realizing their dream and actually going for it because they're frightened of being made fun of.
Yes, or made to appear foolish for having chosen that pathway. Quite so. Many people will, of course, recoil at the extreme negativity of such a family offended by someone daring to move outside of the box, outside of the normal reference point of life.
Yes. And just one person laughing at you saying, oh gosh, you're not going to do that, you're bound to fail at that, you're this, that and the other, and actually, you know, put them down, can actually just stop people from trying. Just
yes,
one person.
Of course, absolutely so, particularly as it tends to typecast them, particularly, as you say, if it is a family member that does this, the family member who is objecting so much may feel there is a jealousy factor within the voice, within the thought process behind it. It may well be they are coming from a place they did not have the will or the intuition or the understanding, perhaps, to move beyond their own sacred life and have actually become quite jealous of your ability to be able to do just that, to actually take a step beyond a chance, maybe a foolish one that they see it as being, but a chance nonetheless to step outside of normal operation, the things that normal people do.
Yes. The other aspect of parallel lives is the fact that the spirit world runs in parallel with our lives.
Yes, of course. And many people do not really understand this facet of it. After all, you yourself have a parallel life. You, as a physical being, operate in the physical world. But at other times of your day, you also operate in the spirit world too. It may be that this comes about in dreams. It may be that the cause of dreams is, in fact, you having some kind of out-of-body experience, or that you actually move or are shown a way to move along with your dream state into other states or dimensions of reality. It may be you are shown different places or have meetings with people within this state of reality. It doesn't mean to say you are an alien for having done so. It doesn't mean to say you are in any danger either, of course. This is a perfectly natural and normal thing to come about in your life. What it does mean is you, in fact, when you are taking part in this kind of exercise, that you are fulfilling a great deal more of your life's purpose and destiny than you had ever possibly imagined you could do. Yes, you may be living quite a normal life. You may actually find certain aspects of your life are quite trivial, and yet you have times when you are able to move at the behest of your spirit, perhaps whilst you are asleep, into different dimensional states. This may be something which brings great surprise and understanding to you of relative ease. You may not be that intelligent a person, and yet the situation that you come up against, that you confront in these times, are so wide and varied, things beyond your wildest imagination, better than on the telly, better than anything anyone could ever have painted for you. The illumination of the spirit. This is a parallel life. A life that is part of your life, that runs alongside it, is entwined within it. With every fiber of your being, you actually exist in two places at once. You have one foot in the physical world and the other foot in the spirit world. And you are able to visit both at any time, day or night, you wish to.
Well, you mentioned visiting it at night when you're asleep. How do you do that in the daytime?
And in the daytime, you may take a cat nap. You may feel you have to rest a while. It may be that you purposefully meditate, and that is how you bring about a new direction to your life, how you focus away, perhaps, from the mundane aspects of your life that you have to cope with in order to bring about, as I said, material existence, because that is what you live within. It may be that during this aspect of life, you are actually able to find a different island, a different place. A kind of sanctuary without actually physically going anywhere. Yeah.
And so our loved ones walk with us as well. So that's a parallel life as well, isn't it? Because they walk among us, and our guides who walk with us, that walk our journey with us in parallel.
Yes, there are guides and helpers. There is your doorkeeper who walks with you every step of the way, who is there when you need them to be. Not necessarily to have an active part in your life, because your life would not have the free will it has within it if they were there to do everything for you. But they are there as a witness to your life. And so, yes, they journey with you. And so, too, do others, members, perhaps, of your ancestral family, genetically linked, perhaps, to do with your life. Your uncles, aunts, cousins, or grandparents, or whoever it is. Parents, maybe, or children whom you have briefly known. All of these people will have interactivity in your life, regardless of whether you know that or not, whether you believe it is immaterial. They will still have awareness of the things you are going through. You face nothing alone. You may feel that you are alone sometimes. In the dead of night or in desperate situations, you may feel as though you are isolated and cut off from the world. But you are not. These lives walk with you. You may ask of them to give you help. You may ask of them to give you healing, perhaps to help you in some decision or facet of reality that you need to be focused upon. They may bring themselves to your mind, to your consciousness, at a time when you least expect it, at a time perhaps when you are concentrating on something else. It may be that you have been bereaved or something like that, and that you are feeling completely isolated and cut off from your previous life in the physical world. This does not diminish your responsibility to yourself, or mean that someone is always spying on everything that you do. It doesn't mean to say that you have to watch your back for someone else to tell upon you. But what it does mean is that there are witnesses aplenty for the things you create in your life. Therefore, always try to make your judgments correct. Truthful opinions count. Brave ideas are not brazen if they are ideas which float on a sea of calm.
And the spirit world is all around us, isn't it? People tend to look up to the heavens and that sort of thing.
Quite an idyllic situation, looking up to heaven or down to hell.
Yes, but the spirit world is actually all around us.
Between every leaf and every blade of grass, even between your finger touching your nose, the spirit world exists. Within you and without you. Within the chair upon which you sit, or the table at which you eat. The spirit world is both sides of the door you open and close to your mind and to your house. It is everywhere you breathe and everything you look upon. It is in all facets of personality and all facets of material substance that is the spirit world. The place where no matter is and dark matter exists is nothing but the sea of calm in the spirit world.
Well, a good example of this is that usually when we do this sort of situation, we are sat in a sort of a gallery situation in the spirit world.
Yes, that is true.
Because what I was just going to say was, well, we could be sat in somebody else's front room now or something like that in their house, but actually we're sat in the gallery, aren't we? But that's just an example of what I was meaning.
Yes, that is true, friend. You are presently taking part in a very large gallery. It is within an auditorium which has no walls, yet has floors of space where people stand and stare and comment, look and point, and touch one another. Some have cheery smiles, some have watery eyes, some are wide agape with wisdom and knowledge coming from every pore, whilst others are small children, or people or animals and beasts, who even in their state of life are able to understand every word you say, because in the spirit world language is not a barrier to anything. It is only something which is of the concept of physical reality, and that is a restriction that physical reality has. These places of walls that do not seek or do not speak of their name, these places of floors that do not carry or do not sound, and yet people stand upon them. It is hard, I know, for physical people to understand exactly what the spirit world is, and how it is made up. You need to have attention of your mind to understand what realities are able to be shaped within the consciousness thought of a single being. The first thing you have to do is open the doorway of your own innermost mind to the perception that change is reality, that you may move from one concept that is now to another which is future or past. It may be the concept or thought you have is not yet born, but is within your state of mind, because that is the first mind to have brought it there, to have bared it, to given it life. Therefore, it means reality and perception has changed for all others who may view it. And this is true of physical life as well. You are all thinking of new reality, new change. New ideas are being born within a mind every second of every minute of any hour, in any day, in any life, and all in the twinkling of an eye. I am, because you am beautiful, because you can see and make up these ideas. You can bear this fruit of knowledge for others to see, and they will say the eyes have it, that you are displaying something of virtue of your spirit for all to see. Something of creation, because that is what creation is. Not the willingness of one force to exert energy upon another force, and then for that force to yield to that energy. It is not how the spirit world works. That is to do with things of material world. What we are talking about is the displaying of knowledge and wisdom, which has the ability for people to look upon it, focus it, and then allow it to change their reality and perception of life. It is part of the problem of why human beings at this present time are so steeped in their own cul-de-sacs of life. They are looking at religious indicators of how their life could become perfect, and yet are failing to see their own inner perfectness. Their own perception of beauty is clouded by what they see as the beast and not beauty.
Mm-hmm.
That is because they see the perception has become a judgment within a mind not to perceive the reality of truth, that beauty is within everything that exists. It is really the failure on the part of one to see that beauty define itself, to acknowledge it and understand it for the true creation it is and carries of life, of God or Lord is.
Yes. In your book, Spirit Walks with Gregory, you say that you could have two very similar situations that run in parallel. Yet if you use the wide spectrometer to look at them, you would see that the distance between them is as great as can be.
Yes, or as small. It is as though you are looking at something which you think is fastened together, that is stuck or glued or whatever. And actually, when you look at it through a microscope, you are actually seeing that there is a layer between those two objects which is actually stopping it from meeting in the middle. Therefore, my analogy is to say that if you look at a tree upon the horizon and you see it within the perspective you have acquired in relation to that tree and how everything else upon the horizon and the forms and shapes within it are changing to meet the object. Yet, when you move toward the tree, you actually see and perceive the space within it, the true space within it, not the space you identified from the distance, because your perception of reality was unclear. You could only see it from the vantage point of how you adjusted your focus and form to all other realities which you had already accepted as being a part of that window of sight. Do you see?
Yes, I do.
And the very fact then that you go up to it means that your perception and reality changes. You see it in a different light, in a light anew. That is why many people look at a painting and they may see it from a long distance away, down a great hall perhaps, because the painting has to be seen at a specific distance to acknowledge its beauty, or what the artist wishes the viewer to capture. In a different way of looking at this, when you move up very close to the picture in question, you may observe the broad brush strokes. You may observe a very different tactile surface of thick streams of paint, of thick colours matted and bedded upon the canvas. But actually close up, it looks like something completely different. Your objective view becomes changed and altered because you have identified with what you perceived in your vision, in your window of image, was the reality you expected to see, perhaps, but that then, when you came upon it, you could see it anew, in exactly the same way as you look at the flower, and you see the stamen within it, and you see the beauty that it has, the form and shape that it has, yet when you look at it under a microscope or a magnifying glass that you look at it through, you actually observe it in a completely different light. You would see all of the veins upon it, you would see all of the different color reflections of the beauty within it completely differently. It would change your reality, your perception of what you see now as real is only really the limit of definition of your perception and your willingness to view it in a different way. Not to just accept the first opinion, you understand, but actually to look at it closer and understand a more defined image is possible in your life.
Okay, we've got a couple of minutes left. I'd just like to mention and ask you about actually something else that I took out of the Spirit Walks with Gregory book of yours. And you said, the next time you are faced with a situation you cannot fathom your way through, remember there are many roads to freedom. All are clearly marked and signposted. It is just a matter of you reading the map to work out your journey.
Yes, absolutely so. The map of your life is to do with the insight that you may have. the little pictures that you may have of what could be. This is to do with the images I mentioned before, the dreams that you have, to do with the way of possibilities that may come upon your road of life. It doesn't mean to say that you have to take all of them. It does mean that you can look and observe them, perhaps digest their innermost meaning. How would you know when you come upon an insight if you do not examine every leaf, every petal that you stand upon, every stone you walk upon in your life? How do you know what you actually walked upon gave you the distinct feeling you had missed something? Because you had. Many Buddhist priests will most carefully take every step, would reverently be careful so as not to tread upon another life, so as not to hurt a worm or the smallest insect, ant or bee, will do this because of the ramification of that action, whether intended or not, whether it is something brought from ignorance or an action from an accident, from bad timing or ill judgment. It matters not. It is what you bring about in your life which affects other people and affects the whole planet. You may not feel that you are justified in your life. You may feel you are unworthy, that you have not ascended the dizzying heights of being a guru or being some other ascended master on the lips of babes. How do you know the creation of your life and your well-being, the life you have led and the way you have manifested it to others, the loves, laughter, and the joy you have brought is only to the limit of your own understanding of what your life may mean to someone else? You are precious to someone, even if it is to your mother's memory, even if that preciousness is to do with someone in the spirit world who looks upon you with love. Every step is important for us all to make in the best light of insight we can manifest in our life. It is important for us to focus upon a changing world and move with our own reality, not the agenda of someone else, but our own reality, so that we can really become happier human beings and bless the spirit we are.
Well, Gregory, it's been so lovely. Thank you once again.
Our blessings as always, dear friend, upon your journey and life. We thank you for this time, and God bless everyone.
Thank you. And I'd just like to mention that our website is www.spirit-teaching.com, where you can find out more about us and our work, and as well as Spirit's Work radio show on bbsradio.com on Mondays and Thursdays. We have the Spirit Teaching radio show on artistfirst.com on Tuesdays. Details are also on our site. Well, we hope you enjoyed the show, and thank you so much for listening. My name is Sylvie Avery, and you've been listening to Spirit's Work. So until next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing that you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.